you now how you ended up going back to college to finish the rest of your schooling.
Well, I worked for Ethel Corporation for the 10 years.
What was the name of the corporation?
Ethel Corporation.
How do you spell that?
E-T-H-Y-L, like an ethyl gas.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And
what did you do for them?
I worked on a lead furnace. And while I was working there, I worked on a lead furnace, pigging lead. We poured molten lead into a mold that went around, and we picked it out when it got solid and stacked it in stacks. It was very physical work. In 1 5-year period, I picked up and stacked 81 million pounds of lead. And that's probably a very conservative estimate.
And where was that? Was that in Texas?
That was in Louisiana.
Oh, you're back in Louisiana. Okay.
Yeah, and then I saw no end to that, so I enrolled at LSU. My wife got a job, went to work. And I picked up a bachelor's degree pretty quick. I had 2.5 years of credits. So I picked up my bachelor's pretty quick and began a graduate study for a master's degree. And I worked as pretty much a scientific illustrator and cartographer in a Coastal Studies Institute laboratory. Making maps and stuff.
Okay, so were you saying, so at LSU, your bachelor's degree and your master's were in geography?
Yes.
Both in geography?
Yes.
And why did you decide to study geography?
Well, I've always had the idea that the more you knew about the world and its people, the more responsibly you could find your way through to an advantage. I believe strongly that one of our weaknesses in the U.S. is an uninformed constituency. I believe strongly that we should require geography and education more than we do. I often cite the civilizations that have prospered and have been good geographers, starting with the Phoenicians and the English with their empire, that the more you know about the rest of the world, the more advantages you have. And I feel like there's a minimum amount of knowledge of the world that everyone should have. Why do we have such goofy days and nights in Fairbanks, Alaska? It's because of the differential bisection of the circle of the latitudes and the circle of illumination bisecting the parallel, the latitudes, parallels. Excuse me. And why we don't have more geography taught in our schools, I just don't know. we have the tools now to do things rapidly and accurately. I'm of an age where I wasn't required to type. My school didn't have a typewriter except the principal in 1939. Typing wasn't taught in some schools. My wife was a stenographer. The Department of Geography at LSU had stenographers. We wrote out in script and longhand our papers and they typed them up for us.
Yeah.
I'm right on the cusp of when computers became important, and the computer that I used at LSU, I had to wait months to use it. It cost a couple hundred dollars for 15 minutes. And in those 15 minutes, more was accomplished than in days of plain tabling.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I never became literate in computers because I had passed it by, or they had passed me by.
Yeah.
So today I'm what you call an illiterate person.
Well, you are certainly not illiterate in the real sense of the word.
I remember when the lady came up, teacher Dr. Erna Gunter came up from the University of Washington when we were having our problems with personnel and teachers at the university. She came up to help out. And I asked her if Amy, who was acting somewhat as a secretary for the department, could type something up. And she says, "Why don't you type it up?" And I says, "Well, I don't type." And she says, "In this day and age when somebody can't type, they're just illiterate." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." So she didn't come to work early one day, and I found out that she had to put her car in the shop. She had a cute little station wagon, and she said, "I had to take it to the mechanic to fix it." I says, "Well, in this day and age, when you can't fix something you use every day, you're just illiterate." And she says, "Touché."
Yes, you got it. So, back at LSU, you're studying geography, were a master's, and you work at this coastal studies place. Was that part of the university?
Yes, it was. It no longer is. It was funded by the Office of Naval Research.
Uh-huh.
And that's why we got to use it in a study that I worked on up on the Colville River. So, after getting my master's degree, I was asked by a professor if I would come to Alaska with him. With my experience with cartography and aerial photo interpretation, I worked to interpret some aerial photos he had of the Delta. And as a consequence, he asked me if I'd come with him as his assistant on the research in the Colville, and he gave me the sand dunes as my project to investigate for my dissertation.
And what was his name?
Is Dr. Freeze.
That's okay. I thought you might remember. So how did you, you had mentioned you did cartography and scientific illustration. How did you learn those?
I just picked them up from my artwork, and I don't know.
You didn't take a class in them?
No, I never took classes in... I took painting classes, but I never really learned much. I learned what I was doing wrong.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it must be your general artistic nature made you be able to be a good scientific illustrator.
I drew house types and little storage bins for corn and stuff in Mexico. I originally was going to go to Mexico and do my dissertation research in the settlement geography of Tamaulipas State in northern Mexico. And then I got this invitation to come to Alaska. Well, I had told my parents all over the years that I wanted to come to the North Pole with Santa Claus. And Jess Walker, the professor that I couldn't recall his name just now, asked me to accompany him. We came up in 1960 and 61. I delivered a paper at the AAAS conference on my way back from the Colville. And when I got back to Louisiana, had a letter offering me a job in the Department of Anthropology and Geography.
Here at UAS.
Under Dr. Scarlin.
So what were you studying on the Colville with the sand dunes?
Was the origin and the formation of the dunes that exist. There's some fairly massive dunes. I think about 40 feet is a distance above sea level, but 40 feet on the North Plain is a mountain. So my problem was to establish the oldest dunes in the secondary and then the present dune face.
Hmm. Now, to me, that seems more like geology than geography.
Well, physical geography includes some of that.
Oh, okay.
My professor, Dr. Walker, was a geomorphologist. He subsequently wrote, I did nothing more about the Delta. I became involved here in teaching to the point that I didn't have any time to to do much. Now, I originally came to the university on a 9-month contract, and I think my wages were $950 a month for 9 months. With 3 months, no pay.
Yeah.
You can't live very well with two children and a wife to support in Fairbanks, Alaska, on a 9-month salary.
Right.
I remember Dr. Scarlin and Hadley West met me at the airport, welcomed me, and that was a real help. And the university had taken a one-bedroom utility department at Fairview Manor. And there were the three of us in that one-bedroom place. We had a time. I didn't like it there at all. I'd never lived in an apartment. And I certainly had never lived in one like the Fairview Manor. We stayed there a while and were able to get a housing on campus. And we were moved into Dr. Bunnell's residence that had been moved over across campus and under which was a home ec department. we were very happy with that. But I had an opportunity to buy this homestead in 1964. And I felt like living on the campus was good and handy, but it was also like a fishbowl. And I liked the country, so we moved into this house November the 1st of 1964.
And you built this house then? This was just
this
raw land.
Part of this house was here.
Oh, the house was here.
Part of it, very little part. Only a small portion. I've added on several times. Now I have a big house, and it's just me.
That happens. So, when you said you'd gone out and given a presentation at the American Anthropological Association meetings, and you got the job offer, had you applied for a job here?
No.
They just were looking for somebody and knew about you?
I guess, based it partly, they must have based it on that presentation of the paper I gave, and they were looking for a geographer, and I was a candidate for a PhD. And
So you came and started the job. You had not yet finished your PhD.
That's right.
Okay, and what year was this? 1962?
62.
Okay.
In the middle of the year, I came in January. We drove a Volkswagen microbus from Louisiana out and across the Southwest and up the West Coast, put it on an Alaska steamship, shipped it to Alaska. We stayed in a motel in Seattle near SeaTac.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, we bought some cheap sleeping bags and wrapped all our stuff in. Our luggage on the plane was silverware, which we had no silverware, but flatware.
Yeah.
Pots and pans is minimal, and our clothes and all. And this was before they had a jet. So it was quite a flight from Seattle to Fairbanks.
Did it stop along the way?
No, I don't recall it stopping anywhere. But at any rate, when we hit the airport, Dr. Hadley West and Dr. He wasn't doctor at that time, but...
Scarlin. So who was Hadley West?
He was a geographer, and he had been associated with LSU and Tulane University. And he became interested in archaeology primarily. And he was working on his doctorate and teaching various little classes, and then I was, Dr. Scullin and I were dividing up the classes, and then Dr. Scullin died, and we really had an emergency then. There was.
And when did he die? 64.
I forget. I forget what year.
I have written down, is when he died.
I had a great affection and respect for Dr. Scarlin. My wife and I used to go over to his cabin and drink beer with him. He used to have different kinds of beer from all over. from Norway to Japan, and we were trying it all out. And we had a lot of fun. My wife would cook, and we'd have a feast. Enjoyed his company so much.
And now at this point, anthropology and geography are one department.
Yes. And now when he died, the people that took over the anthropology didn't have any understanding of geography's role or the symbiotic relationship of the two. And I realized if geography was to survive, it had to be separate and a department. I was able to get it separated from anthropology, and at about that time I received an opportunity for a big grant to open up other opportunities for me, but it was that plus the fact that I had an incident occurred with a student cheating that I sort of lost faith in the administration. I had a final exam, and I had advised everyone not to cheat by any means, that cheating was thievery and dishonest and stealing. I had three students that were cheating. One of them took umbrage at his F for the course and created a great deal of controversy. My dean told me that we were going to have trouble because of the fact that I was from Louisiana. I never got the connection of that. And as things rolled along, I realized I had no backing of the administration, judging from what the dean had said. And then there was the opportunity to do research. So I took the research and left the university.
And for a little more detail, you had said you knew this student cheated because they copied and the answers were...
Yes.
Not in line with the questions. He was off, he didn't copyright. He was off a line or something.
Yes, it was. There's no problem in proof there.
Right. You clearly had proof they were cheating.
Yeah.
And you offered him an opportunity to take the test again?
Yes. He at first refused, and then he said he would take it. I gave him a test and a desk to work on, and left him alone. He reacted violently afterwards when he couldn't answer any but a few of the questions.
Yeah.
And still maintaining it, even with proof before him, that I was discriminating against him. For some whatever reason.
And this man was African American.
Yes, he was, in fact, yes.
Yeah. And so the dean was implying because you were from Louisiana, you had made a judgment based on skin color.
Well, he just said that, you know, you're from Louisiana. And I couldn't understand what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not a bigot.
Yeah.
And I was totally honest. And I told these students that if they cheated, they would get an F. There were three that I caught cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But his reaction was violent, crying and cursing, and maintaining he was innocent, he didn't cheat, with the proof positive right in front of him. And I regret that I didn't pursue my case deeper into the administration, and it would have been differently resolved, perhaps.
So did the dean overrode your decision and passed the student in the class?
I'm not sure what happened. Oh, okay. I was frankly so disgusted that I had been questioned and condemned for no reason, that was one of the factors in my leaving the university. Mm-hmm. I wished many times that I'd never had left, that I had made my case. Mm-hmm. And I saved those papers for years. I may still have them, I'm not sure. At this point, I don't give a damn.
Yeah. Well, yes, it would be frustrating to be committed to your students and not have the support of the administration to back you up.
Indeed.
And it sounds like you taught a lot of classes. Would you say 5 or 6 classes a semester?
Yes, I did.
Undergraduate?
Yes, I did. And I got some help, but it's always a year thing. I had a professor from University of Wisconsin that at Milwaukee came up for a year. I had another professor, Charles Hosley, came up, and Dr. Erna Gunther came up, and Dr. Rossi came along about the time I was leaving, and I turned over what I thought to be some appropriate courses for the University of Alaska to be teaching. What became of all these, I'm not sure, because I, for whatever reason, I isolated myself from the University of Alaska and the Department of Geography. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, I probably should have fought it out, but I was very well hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it sounded like you did have this grant, so you had another opportunity.
Yes.
To go into. If you hadn't had an opportunity, perhaps you would have had more reason to need to fight.
Yeah. And times were hard. All of the faculty were pretty fluid in those years. At one point, there was about 3 years, was about as long as a professor's wife would let him stay in Alaska. And it was also financially, some of us had to apply for advance on our next month's salary.
Wow.
In order to live. And I was told by the administration that was fairly common, that at least a third of the faculty were drawing on their next month's salary.
And was that because the cost of living was so high here?
It was part of it, yeah. There was housing was scarce and expensive, non-existent, and it was just hard times.
Mm-hmm.
I felt quite honored when I was given Dr. Bunnell's building to live in.
Yeah.
But as I said, I had a chance to buy this place. It was a homestead.
Yeah.
But I bought it from the guy that owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And I subdivided it later because I needed just a home site.
Right.
And
so what classes were you, what you were teaching classes, what subjects were you teaching?
At one point, I was teaching just about every subject listed. Now, for a while, I taught the courses that my predecessor had taught.
Mm-hmm.
for which I was well qualified, but which I didn't think the university ought to be that deep into.
Such as?
It was Mexico and Central America.
Okay.
And Latin America. And of course, I taught regional geography of Europe and Africa. I taught the ethnology of Africa. I taught one course in what's called primitive religions. But a lot of those things fell by the wayside when just didn't have anybody to teach them.
After Scarlin died?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to sit up many nights, 2 or 3 in the morning, getting ready for the lectures I'd have the next day. My wife acted as my stenographer. I made work maps for the classes. In fact, they were used up until just recently and may still be used.
You handmade maps?
I made work maps, like of part of Latin America. And somebody not 10 years ago said they were still using them. I don't know. More power to them if they could make any use of them.
Mm-hmm. And so what was your particular area of interest for your own research while you were at the university?
I guess it was more of I think classroom teaching came to be, maybe because I did so much of it, it came to be sort of a natural for me, and with a variety of courses. I got educated pretty well.
I would think you would have been a very good classroom teacher.
Well, I was viewed as not too bad, I guess. I had no complaints, really not many, except people who cheated in my classes didn't get by with it.
No. Did you introduce into the geography curriculum more Alaska-centered classes?
Yes, I did. I can't remember all of them, but certainly the geography of Alaska. Pleistocene geography, the geography of northeastern Russia, the geography of Canada and circumpolar countries, I'm saying paleomorphology, but I don't remember.
What about sort of like economic geography or political or stuff about the native cultures in Alaska? Was that more anthropology?
It is both. And that stood me in good stead. I worked for the Tananaw Chiefs Conference when I came back to Alaska from that failed adventure down in Louisiana. I got along good with the native people. I think my rural upbringing and close to the land upbringing equipped me to understand some of the native villagers' problems. The fact that I'd been poverty-stricken might have helped me to understand the lack of things. I had very many noble friends among the village people.
So that in 60, what year did you leave? 66? What, the year you left the university?
66, I believe, 67. I forget.
So what was the big grant project you had that you went down and
did in Louisiana? To introduce geography into secondary schools in Louisiana. A good geography that would be pretty much a standard textbook for Louisiana secondary schools. Mm-hmm. I had some luck with it, but the State Department of Education was so politicalized till academia just didn't occur to them. They looked on me as an invader of some sort. I was from Alaska, so I must have been the ultimate Yankee.
But you're from Louisiana, weren't you?
But I was offered sort of a lifetime tenure if I just cooperate with them.
In Louisiana?
Yeah, like kick back a certain amount of my salary to the fellas that wound up in the penitentiary later. So dishonesty doesn't pay. But it was a come down to me. They had already hired my associate without even asking me or checking his qualifications. He had none. He was a mediocre history teacher in the eighth grade. And he bought a little bitty car and he got per diem, and all he did was ride that little car all over the state of Louisiana and draw per diem. Mm. And he couldn't talk about what I was wanting to do. He didn't understand what I wanted to do, and they had hired him. And they were also taking money out of my... I had a $250,000 grant. That's sizable.
Yeah.
And I had... employed a graduate student from LSU to help me, and she later left me, and I just realized I couldn't get it done. So I called Washington and got them to come here. Tell me what to do. I wanted to give them the money back, and I did.
Oh.
What was left. I think it was $187,000 left that hadn't been squandered. But I hadn't been able to do anything.
Because the people in Louisiana just weren't supportive of the idea of geography in the schools?
Educators were, but these were politicians that it was under.
Mm-hmm.
It had to go through them. And they figured they had complete control of it. I had no control of it. Well, it was my project.
Right.
And you can't do anything like that. It won't work.
So at some point, did you end up finishing your PhD? What happened with that?
No. It's in a box upstairs, my thesis is, and I never did. It worked on me for a good many years. It still does to a small degree, but I mentioned PhD, and someone says that means beating your head on the desk. Other things. But I just, I gave up, I guess, eventually. But not altogether.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went on to be able to be successful without it.
Yes, Yes.
I suppose if you had wanted to return to the university, that might have been a different
yes.
thing.
I taught some after I came back from Louisiana. I taught some off-campus courses. Traveled all the way to Tok. Hmm. I drove to Tok once at 72 below zero. Oof. Almost come within a few miles of being a fatal thing.
Yeah.
My car was quitting on me.
Uh-oh. But also, you did do some archaeology, right?
Yes.
When was that?
During the summers, like when Dr. Scarlin knew I had to live, and Dr. Scarlin wanted to keep me. He never had any problems. And he got me a job doing a survey of McKinley Park's archaeological sites. I knew enough about archaeological sites to spot them. And again, my rural upbringing and all, I was pretty good at finding things. And being a geographer, I was qualified to do that particular job. And so he helped me get that job to fill that summer, you know.
And so by survey, you're out looking at the landscape and saying there's a site over here and there's a site there. You weren't excavating the sites.
Yes. I didn't excavate the sites. My job wasn't to do any excavating. It was just, it was the first general survey locating archaeological sites. I located 16, and I turned in a report to the National Park Service.
And I think that was 1963, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I forget what year.
I mean, we looked at that reference on the computer, and I think it was 63, somewhere around there.
They got me listed in there as Dr. Morris Morgan.
Oh. Well, there you go.
And so much for records, I sent a donation to the Alumni Association at LSU. They send me a 7-pound book of everybody that's an alumni, and I'm listed with 2 degrees in geology.
Well, there is some, as I say, there's some overlap, I suppose. But do you also... You're associated with the campus site at the university, up between the Bunnell and Duckering buildings, right?
Only vaguely. I wasn't in favor of building over the most important site in North America as far as early sites of habitation. It's a very important site. And we were able to get Hans George Bondi over here, and he's internationally known, and he worked with the site. Hadley West worked with the site. I never did any excavating of the site, but I was opposed to paving it over in order to build buildings, and that might have been what Dr. Lynch referred to. I also was against this operation of blowing up Kivalina Harbor with atomic bombs.
Oh, the Project Chariot?
Yes.
Yeah, Point Hope, yeah.
I came out vocally about that, and Dr. Wood was in favor of it. Dr. Wood was in favor of any kind of a booming operation. Firecracker Boys say that pretty well.
Mm-hmm, that book, Dan O'Neill's book, yeah. So the campus archaeological site, you didn't work on any of the excavations, but you knew it was important.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's what is sort of under the parking lot of, well, now they're building a new building there, but it was a parking lot.
I've lost track of it now, and I just washed my hands of it because Hadley West figured that was his bailiwick, in which it was. I didn't want anything to do with it. Yeah. I was not trained to deal with that stuff or anything. But
the fact that you were outspoken against it and against Project Chariot, you think that had anything to do with your leaving the university?
It might have been, had something to do with the fact that the Dr. Wood and the people close to him figured it'd been better if I just wasn't around. Those things can be pretty cruel at times. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't fire you.
No.
You chose to leave because of the student cheating issue.
No, I wasn't fired.
Right. You chose to leave for your own reasons.
Okay. I probably shouldn't have, as I said before. I probably should have.
So you left Louisiana to come back to Alaska.
Yeah. And that was during the pipeline period with the building of the pipeline and all that uproar. Mm-hmm. And there was a Arctic Gas, they called it, a corporation that's going to build a pipeline for natural gas from Prudhoe Bay to the McKinley Delta and ship it down the Canadian pipelines.
They're still talking about that.
Well, when they come on board, Dr. Carl Francis, who had worked in the Arctic some, called me and asked me if I knew anybody that would lay out a route for that pipeline. And I said to myself, well, that sounds like something I'd love to do. And so I told him, I says, I recommend me, or words to that effect. And he was working for them then, and he got me a contract to build that, work on that route. Well, I did. I got the contract, and I just begun laying out certain physical things that I needed on the aerial photos and actual field maps that I already had. And it was a fairly straightforward thing, and I had bought equipment, things that I figured we'd need in the field, instruments for surveying and such, boats, inflatables, and had hired several people to help in it. And I got a call one day when I was just getting into it that they were closing shop down in Anchorage. They weren't going to do it. Mm. And I said, well, what if I was out a lot of money so far. I'd spent some good bit of money. And I had sent them a bill for it. And they said, well, beyond that, to finalize everything, he said, they're moving it. File cabinets out of here. He says, we owe you money. I says, well, send it along. And I said, put the check in the mail. And he laughed and he says, I'll do that. And I said, yeah, okay. So sure enough, they did mail me a check. It got me squared away. I made more money consulting in 2 or 3 months than I'd make teaching for 2 years.
Yeah.
But
before we leave the geography department and the university altogether with the rest of your career, you've said about you had a role in separating out geography from anthropology.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you accomplished that?
I'm not sure, except that I talked to the dean, and I told him my thoughts on it and the reason for it. And I don't remember our written correspondence or records or anything. As I understand it, two different ladies were told they were going to take over the anthropology. And I didn't know them. I didn't know anything about their orientation or anything. And I figured geography was going to get just scrubbed because of the frantic things we went through after Scarlin's death, and then Hadley West left. He evidently saw no future in staying here. So it might have been that geography was looked upon as sort of a troubling thing or something. But at any rate, I had talked to some of the administrators of the university. I won't mention their names, but they thought, one of them told me, geography, you should have finished that in the fifth grade. And I just said, oh Lord, what am I up against? So, I'm not sure. I sort of dropped it on Rossi, and he took over and did well. I'm very proud of him, and his wife was lovely.
So when you left, geography was not yet its own department. It hadn't transitioned to be separate quite yet, or had it?
Yes, it had.
Oh, it had.
Yeah. That's my understanding, that it was a separate department.
Okay.
And with the addition of Dr. Rossi, which he had a good reputation and good qualifications, I thought that they'd build on to a second and third, and at least three PhDs and maybe a couple of assistants, but it didn't happen. I'm not sure why, but I felt like I'd sort of ground my nose down trying to keep it alive.
Mm-hmm. Who were the other faculty at that time teaching geography when you were trying to make it separate? Were you the only one?
No. There was Dr. Charles Hosley. And it's been so long ago, I'm not sure then. Dr. Erna Gunther came up as a stopgap.
And that's right. So there were other people teaching geography. It wasn't just you.
Yeah, they were helping me. I was to a point where I was able to get a full night's sleep, in other words.
There was something else I was just going to ask about that.
But there's a... I don't know... I don't think geography as a science was sold properly. And geography is easy to attack, that people can make a Department of Natural Resources. And then they can say, well, let's teach demography, or political science, or political geography. And they can fragment it to the point that the central core of it, what you need to know in order to be a geographer, gets sort of lost. And I think I see that in part at the university now, where they're going out and getting courses out of a different department and pulling them in and mixing it with a course or two in geography and saying that's geography. There's a method in geography, and it needs to be followed. And with the tools they have today, it should be very easy and fast. I'm not going to ever be a part of that because I've pretty well lived out my time. So,
what's an example of some of the methods of geography?
Well, the melding of people and the land. We talk about sustainability. That's sort of what geography is all about. Systems that can continue to work. We have abused this planet enormously, and it has been able to sustain our abuse, but it's beginning to look like it can't sustain our ignorance much longer. And the core of geography, you ask me, would be an understanding the possibilities. If you understand what can be done, you won't use a moldboard plow in the Great Plains. You come in and you turn the turf upside down and the sod blows away. And there it is up there on the wall.
Yeah, the dust bowl.
We do dumb things. If people practice geography and found out what could be done that wouldn't totally destroy the landscape. But we have historically, from the beginning, we have had civilization spring up and die out and move over and start something else and spring up and die out. The countries who studied geography most and profited from it can be pointed out, and I could point out England as one, Spain as another, the Netherlands, Dutch as well. But England became an empire because of their knowledge of the world and because of their marine nature. This is a book of geography that I have in my collection, that when you read it, you say, oh boy, an Englishman wrote this book. That's true. This is the sixth book of a series of the High Roads of Geography. This is the sixth book. They've got five more before this. And they learned that by differential bisection of the circle of illumination. They learned that in the first book. Mm-hmm. They learned the physics of the earth, and they have to know that to understand, so they know what they can do. Now, the English were, well, they had this British Empire that sun never sat on it. But the British Empire sat on it. They went into places wanting to make these places like England, which they couldn't. In some cases, they did. In Australia, when I was in Australia, there were Australians were all white. They didn't want didn't want other races.
Right.
They wanted homogeneity. And that's But it's different today. Mm-hmm. Very different.